Come in, buddy.
Hello, it's Taking It Down, the pop culture podcast for the alabamatake.com. I'm your host, editor-in-chief of the website, Blaine Duncan's my name, and joining me in just a second are going to be two co-hosts, Adam Morrow and Donovan Ronwald, two of the best in the biz. This week, we're going to talk about a little bit about Joe Pera's return to television with the TV show Joe Pera Talks With You, and a little bit about the absurd and fun and somewhat historically accurate drama slash comedy, though more comedy than drama, from Hulu, The Great. That's the name of it, The Great. If you don't know, season two just started. Let's welcome in our two co-hosts. And we've got the minister, Adam Morrow, more on that. And we've Dr. Donovan Ronwald, though you're not really a doctor, but
it's great to be here.
Yeah, I always think of you. You should go get a PhD because I always think of you as doctorate. I know your wife is.
Do it for Blaine.
Okay. What should I get it in? You can call me. I've got a master's degree. Master.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Master Ronwald.
Doesn't feel as I don't know, in a British sense.
Yeah, it makes me feel like a fancy boy.
All right. Okay. But we do have Minister Adam Morrow. He is here for your weddings. If you need him, he just got off a wedding yesterday. You want to comment on this at all, or are we just going to leave it hanging?
How much you charge for that? $6,000-$7,000?
How much can you get for that? I wonder. No, this was wedding number three that I was roped into after close college friends got me the online certification to do their wedding, and here we are. It's like once word gets out. I mean, three in close to a decade, that's a tolerable number. You know, I don't mind doing them. It's just, I was telling you all off air, it's a lot of pressure for a guy who doesn't really remember what all goes into a wedding until this moment comes. It's like, what all you have to do stuff, the I do's, the rings, the vows. Emotions are running high, too. That's a situation I generally try to avoid.
Plus, there's, you know, the Lord. You do it wrong, he gets pissed.
You had notes, though, right?
I went off the notes. Yeah, I printed them out, and I was trying to think if I shouldn't put my Google Doc printout like in a book, you know. But I couldn't really land on what book to take onto the. There wasn't a stage, but into the front of this crowd.
You didn't want to go Bible?
I was thinking like a issue of Penthouse.
Yeah, porno mag.
just whip that out.
I think that
read the ceremony from there.
Lean over, hold it to the groom, and say, "This is what you'll do." Show it to the bride and say, "This is what's going to happen." Yeah, I mean, educational all around.
It's a beautiful thing. Marriage is beautiful, isn't it?
It is.
It's a racket, according to Pete Campbell from Mad Men.
I didn't even see a chip and dip last night. It was very disappointing.
That's upsetting. How many weddings do you have to go to see a dang chip and dip?
We commonly do a little football talk. And do we have breaking news this morning as we're recording?
Do we? I must have missed this.
Stan Mullins is gone.
No way. I didn't see that.
Now, his name is actually Dan Mullen, right?
I shit you not. I have to Google this nearly every time because I've called him Stan so much. Almost every time I have to Google who he is.
Stan Mullins. Ooh. Gone from Florida.
Where do you think he's going to go next?
UA, University of Alabama offensive coordinator. About 95%.
You think they're from the right? Him and Saban, could they coexist? Is Saban going to suffer, Stan?
Look. We were having the same conversation about Lane Kiffin 7 years ago or whatever. So,
I think we learned that the answer for that was yes and no. Like, yes, he can stand him for a little bit, and then no, Lane Kiffin has to go somewhere else. So I wonder if it would be the same thing. Like, yes, he can work with him for a little bit, and then Dan Mullins needs to go, you know, he needs to go do his next thing.
That's every coach in the Saban recovery process. You come in for two or three years, and then you go get yourself a job.
It seems to me that Lane has a bit more of a Blaine's a bit more of a prodigal son, though, whereas Dan is a... He's been in the game a little bit longer and has... The tree is a bit more established tangled. Outside of, the Saban world. I don't know.
It's a tangled tree. Old Steve Sarkisian's not doing so hot either, speaking of former Saban assistants.
No, I placed a bet against Texas this weekend, and it paid off because...
That was a good bet to
because
make.
They're in a tailspin.
I can't believe that this program has not touched upon the many controversies surrounding Texas in the last few weeks.
And here's why. Because speaking of being tangled, that story is a tangled mess. I'm not sure I have it sorted. And maybe you, amongst the three of us, have a good sense of what this is. I have such a bad idea of what it is that I don't know if I've found it funny yet. So for our listeners, especially if you're a listener who don't keep up with college football, this might be for you. Adam's going to break down a very quick story related to University of Alabama and Texas.
I didn't know we were going to talk about this, so I'll go without notes. Well, I'll attempt to do this.
You know, you've texted it to me, and I've read tweets, but I haven't really pieced it in logical order.
Well, I was reminded of this week.
Logical order works against it.
Well, the video came out of Texas defensive coordinator who's been on Saban staffs before on the bus coming back from their game last week, just cussing up a storm and, you know, yelling at the players. And there were some folks who said, how can you talk like this? And other folks who are more familiar with the inner workings of a football program saying, no, this is what you want. This is the kind of guy you want firing your guys up. So my dad was asking me about that, and I said, I tipped a toe in the water because, as we'll get into the details, this is an odd thing to share with the family. Not really a family topic, but I said, have you heard about the Texas monkey? And he had not. And by the end of the conversation, because we're texting, he said, I have tears in my eyes. I'm laughing so hard right now. So Donovan, you're familiar with this, right? You kept up with...
I'm familiar
You keep up with all things college football.
When you said go to Bunky Perkins and see, like, he's talking about the monkey, that's when I had to go.
So the Texas special teams coordinator, whose name I'm blanking on right now, was on staff at Bama 2 years ago and apparently left his wife for a acrobatic stripper. I'm trying to put this in a... Because what she did was is a fairly athletic routine at strip clubs involving the pole dancing.
Was she in Alabama?
I don't know where she was. I mean, I think she was more of a big city. I mean, I'm not sure that she was like in the wilds of Alabama doing this routine. I think it was more of a big city kind of kind of thing.
Birmingham stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure where she's from. So this guy leaves his wife for this woman. And as part of this woman's show, she had a little monkey that was trained also to climb the pole and to—I don't know. So this is so it comes out. This story kills me. It comes out on Halloween or shortly after that at their nice neighborhood in Austin where they live now, the monkey attacked a trick-or-treater, one of the neighborhood kids. And apparently latched on to the degree that several men had to, like, pry the jaws off of the kid, which is both horrific to think about for the child, but just absolutely hilarious. I don't know how you, like, if you wake up the next morning and you are the person in charge of Texas football's Twitter presence, and you see all of these things trending, like, how do you salvage your day at that point?
You know you're about to get tweeted on.
If you're Sark, do you have to call a guy into your office? And, like, how does the conversation start? So, I heard the monkey bit a kid.
First you're like, what's the monkey's name? Is it Raymond?
All three of us are years deep in Tuscaloosa. We know a handful of people that work for the University of Alabama. And isn't it at least a little factual, somewhat surmised that the stripper came to like a gathering of coaches and was told not to come back to the... Isn't that...
The impression I got was just not invited. It was like a family barbecue or something like that. And
he brings the stripper, and it was told, don't bring her here.
I don't know that she has non-professional gear, attire, whatever. Like, you know, she couldn't just come casual to this event. I don't know all the details there. But all this all just leads me to maybe the funniest point, which Bunky Perkins, of course, made, that there's a non-zero chance that the monkey has met Saban. Which is just great. This whole story unfolding, and the way that you have to, like, when things start trending on Twitter, you know, and you're not getting like a concise CNN breaking news two paragraph thing that tells you the who, what, when, where's, and you're having to put all this together on your own, and the pieces are slowly forming into a narrative, and you're having to like figure out, why is there a monkey? How's this tied to Texas football? That was a joyous day.
Just this joyous one was good day. Because there was always one more detail, you know, like that you kind of had to chase down.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, the monkey worked for a stripper. Okay, okay. What's the stripper's stage name? It was something hilarious. I don't remember what it was.
I love that you say the monkey worked for the stripper as if it was like an employee.
I mean, part of the act, right? That's working for.
I suppose so. He's drawing a W-2.
Yeah, he's an independent contractor.
And let's bring it back to where we started. Dan Mullen. Is his name really Dan Mullen?
Yes, right?
You're mispronouncing Dan.
Stan Mullins.
There we go.
University of Florida. So is he Florida? Is he fired immediately, or is he going to finish the season?
Do you have 10 seconds for me to look at what ESPN said about it?
Yeah,
I didn't have the information when we sat down.
Anyone watch that Utah-Oregon game last night?
Didn't watch it. Saw the score. Picked against Oregon, luckily.
That was smart.
Utah won?
Utah crushed them.
Oregon didn't have a shot.
Wow. What? Was it 38-7?
Yeah, it's a blowout.
You had Ohio State crushed Michigan State.
Golly. That's right. That
surprisingly
just
you'd think a Mel Tucker kind of team. I'm getting the vibe that he's going to be the coach you can't blow out. You might can beat, you know, and even maybe often, but he's gonna have a team that hangs in there and fights. But wow, that's pretty rough for Mel.
I hate that this is where I'm getting this from, but Fox News had the most up-to-date coverage that I could get quickly.
Okay.
And it looks like he's out. He's got there's going to be an interim head coach.
Is it the monkey?
The monkey works for Texas.
Oh,
not...
that's right. I'm getting my wires crossed.
Now, do I believe that there's a monkey with a head coaching job in Florida? Almost certainly. I don't know at what level.
Central Florida does have Malzahn, and that can be confusing. So, yes. Speaking of Malzahn, let's connect another dot here. Auburn losing to South Carolina, and our guy... War Bloggle, whatever his name is. Who cares? He is demanding that Auburn leave the SEC. Shout out to War Bloggle. Never thought I'd do this on this show.
I think they should. They can join the ACC.
Yeah, take them. What difference does it make? They're not going to do it. They're not going to be successful anywhere unless they're in the MAC.
Got him.
Don't disrespect the MAC like that.
In lieu of a sports podcast for the Alabama Take, which we surprisingly don't have one, you'd think that'd be the first podcast we fired away at, but we don't. That's our college. You guys don't have comments on Auburn losing? I thought that'd be.
Oh, it was very funny.
Okay.
But mean, also, aren't you a little worried they're just charging up for next week?
Of course. I'm not saying that they can't beat Alabama. Trust
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
I see that. As the cliche goes, it's so cliche, it's just hilarious to say now. Just throw the record books out the window. Like, if you've been keeping wins and losses in a book, go to your nearest window and throw it out there.
Just chuck it out.
And if you've been keeping them on your computer, chunk your computer.
That's
how it works. No, my honest prediction is that Alabama maybe survives a scare in Auburn and then gets beaten by Georgia. Georgia just can't be beat this season. They're the team.
It's Georgia and everybody else this season. It pains me to say, but that's what it is.
Yeah, that's usually Alabama and everybody else, but nah, it's Georgia. They've earned it.
And that's fine. Yeah,
it's fine. I don't like Georgia, but hey, y'all did it.
Do you not like Georgia?
Nah, never have. I don't like their fans. Their fans are not very nice.
Oh, okay.
Kirby Smart's okay, but... He can be He's okay. I'll just leave it at that. He's fine. I've seen him in a restaurant before, and he seemed nice enough.
What was he doing?
Waiting on a table, as was I.
Oh.
Yep.
You just kind of nod across the room at each other?
It was De Palma's. We were much closer than across the room. We were side by side at the bar. He seemed cool.
Did he smell nice?
He's short. He's a short guy. I'll say that. Yeah. Anyway, that's where we are with college football. We, like I said, in lieu of a sports podcast, we get it out of our system. We're big college football fans. Thanks for sticking in with us. Let's get into a little bit more, I guess that's pop culture, but let's get into a little bit more television, movie related stuff and music.
Great music week.
Yeah, yeah. Lead us in that direction, why don't you? Because three of your favorite bands, probably at least three of your top 10. We had U2, Oasis, and Springsteen all release peak live albums. Am I right?
Well, the U2 stuff is still trickling out. They did.
Is
like
it live?
I have a feeling there will be live content. We just passed the 30th anniversary of Octoon Baby, and they announced a...
I hope they do something special with that album. I want my hands on that on vinyl. That would be good.
So there is going to be some vinyl stuff out. I don't know what all is going to be included in that. You know, they always do remixes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Of their tunes, which are fun, but more in like the interesting way than the listen over and over again kind of way. When they just did All That You Can't Leave Behind, the anniversary of that, they put out a great live set, which was the Boston show, which has been a DVD for a long time, but wasn't available just audio form on Spotify. So I'm hoping that now that the deluxe vinyl is out and they've announced that, that some live cuts from Zoo TV will be available on streaming services, because that would be really great.
That was a huge tour.
Yeah. They toured Joshua Tree for the 30th anniversary and played the record front to back. And there's a lot of folks who really wish.
You saw them.
It was good. It was really good. It's when bands do that, but some of the songs have, like over half of that record is a part of their usual rotation anyway. You know, hearing something like, I mean, the first four songs on that record are just unstoppable, and we're in almost every show since the record came out. So it's a little weird to hear like Where the Streets Have No Name or Wither Without You in the front half of the set instead of anchoring the home stretch. So that's a little weird, but there are definitely people who want them to approximate the Zoo TV tour experience and take that on the road. I feel like that would be a particularly triumphant post-pandemic show, stadium show, or arena show to go see. Not holding my breath, but it'd be really great.
Well, you don't know.
You never know.
Oasis did release full show.
Yeah. Along with video content of the whole thing, which hasn't been done before. And it's the Nebworth 96 show, which is kind of, I mean, even they see that as their peak. And I think a lot of people see that show as the peak cultural moment of Britpop, and a whole, you know, it is the culmination of all of these years that came before it, building towards it. Even other bands, I think, are willing to tip their hat and say, that was it. That was a brief moment before cell phones and the proliferation of the internet and blah, blah, blah. Like, everybody was just out there together, fully in the moment. Easy to romanticize something that happened in the mid-90s now, for sure.
You know what interests me? Oasis feels very, very huge among younger people, like you guys, people like that are 10 years younger than me or so. And I wouldn't have thought that in 1995, 94, 95, when I was into them and buying up every album they released. If you would have told me in 2021 that they would be maybe a little bit more, even more big or more revered, I don't think I would have guessed that, although I like them and still do. I think every time I see someone raving about them online, I'm always a little surprised at first before I can welcome in the praise that they're getting. So what do you attribute that to, Donovan or Adam, either one? Is there, because I'm looking at it from someone who's older and was kind of, I don't mean to sound like this guy, but I was kind of there for it, although I never did see him live. But I was there for the unraveling of that in 94, 95. I feel like I was on board with them as soon as Live Together, or Live Forever, excuse me, Live Forever was out, and even the single before that, I think they did have a single. Definitely Maybe was the album, but as soon as that hit the shelves, I remember buying it on cassette tape. So I feel like I was there, but it's just interesting, just fascinating, and not in a bad way. What do you attribute that stuff to?
Donovan, do you have any guesses? I don't actually know how strongly you feel about Oasis.
That's a good question. I'll tell you, I was listening to the live record, and it was good to clean my refrigerator, too, because that's what I was doing earlier. But, yeah, I'm not super-duper huge into Oasis, so it was kind of interesting listening to this show for me, because it had a bunch of stuff that I hadn't heard before. It was just kind of that live experience. And I can kind of see, you know, it's one of those shows where you can really see the appeal. But as to, like, why, maybe, I don't know if I have a good guess for that, because I've never been huge into Oasis.
Adam and our friend Jeff love them.
I think it's genius songwriting. I think the melodies that they pulled out, the way they structured kind of melancholy chords under vague enough lyrics that felt like they meant something but really could mean whatever you wanted them to. I mean, they are like a... lyrically, like a Rorschach. How are you feeling? Throw it into the song. And I remember in maybe a podcast about them or a documentary or something, somebody saying, you know, their rise, we're going to talk about Springsteen in a second, kind of came from a similar moment of agitation in youth culture in Britain, where it didn't seem like there was that much going on. Industries falling apart. Not really sure what tomorrow is going to be about. And there are just these, you know, soccer hooligans everywhere. And all of a sudden, four of them have a band that are unstoppably good at playing loud rock and roll. And they talked about these guys who would usually, you know, you didn't really want to meet them outside the bar. The people who would be in the first 50 rows of an Oasis show singing along to every word and crying. You know, they would never show that kind of vulnerability in real life. But for some reason, this band just had the power to, I don't know, to capture something that they weren't able to express otherwise. I mean, I think even bands who maybe you wouldn't expect, other British bands to give them credit, people who really don't want anything to do with the Britpop descriptor, whatever, all kind of tip their cap and say, like, when they first started, when Oasis first got cooking, I mean, they talk about it almost like if you're a Tuscaloosa local, you hear the Dexateens talked about, like, just a freight train, get out of the way. They're undeniably good. You just get wrapped up in it if you see them live.
That's interesting. Good, and well put. Another live album came out Friday in full, finally. It's the famous Springsteen No Nukes compilation, I guess. It's called from two nights at Madison Square Garden and sort of put together as one show.
Yeah. I was reading both nights sold out in under an hour. I don't know if it was a situation where they were only going to do one and then... due to demand, put a second up. But it sounds great. It looks great, too. All the footage that I've seen so far, that the Badlands that they put up on YouTube a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the one.
I still haven't seen the whole concert, but having listened to it, I've got to rent it, or I don't know, am I supposed to buy a DVD? What year is it?
Badlands that got released really got me excited for it.
That's real run through a wall music right there.
Absolutely.
Just the energy that's going on.
And it really helps shine a light on those lyrics, I think, how emotional and angry they kind of are.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think angry is not often something that you think of. When I think of Bruce Springsteen, I don't often think of angry.
Right.
But when he's playing angry, at least he seems to be in that song. And, like, he has songs that are angry. And, like, they're angry about stuff that, you know, people should be angry about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny that he's not thought of as a particularly, or maybe I'm generalizing, but he's not thought of as a particularly angry band, I don't think.
I don't think so either. Not like a Rage Against the Machine or something like that.
No.
But no, he does have those lyrics are fairly angry and rightfully so, righteously angry. And he's playing them with a lot of energy and singing them with a lot of energy. And if you watch that tape, he is it's amazing that he can do that for however long those shows lasted both nights.
I was gonna say it's really great. This reminds me a bit of the Octoon Baby moment in their career. I know Springsteen, they've been in the studio for a full year, not really touring. And you can almost feel that pent-up energy of, like, they've been let loose. And it's a cool career moment in parallel to U2, where they have a pretty impressive back catalog already of songs to pull from. Yet, I mean, Springsteen is turning 30 right around these shows. So he's still a young guy, but with that depth of a set list, and I mean The River wasn't even out yet, right? So like when he plays that song, nobody really knows what to do with it. Am I getting that sequence right? I think it was still pre-release for that, because River was 80 and this was 79.
I think you're right.
But I love when bands, when we know that they're going to have a long career and we're looking back and they have like all the energy of youth still going on, but such a command of their own legend. They're kind of doing two different things, and it's a rare moment. And then he becomes, you know, not an elder statesman immediately, but kind of a classic rock figure, just like U2 did.
And the E Street Band currently is larger. I'd almost say bloated, but it seems to work for them. It works quite well still to this day, even though they have a few more members. To say that it's stripped down isn't quite accurate either, but it is just the core E Street Band. You don't have background singers. You don't have a full horn section. You don't have the extra guitar player with Niles. And it's kind of fun just to hear him and him being Springsteen and little Stevie Van Zandt kind of carry the vocals with a couple other people in the band helping. But you can really hear Stevie, and I appreciate that.
You can really hear everything.
Yes.
Every piano part is clear. Every guitar solo is so out front, but everything still sounds so full behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right from the get-go, when they launch an Approve It All Night as the opening song, that's so good. And then when the horn comes in for that famous line and the place just goes crazy. I mean, that was... I haven't been to a big concert since 2019. That was... a heartwarming thing to hear, a big crowd cheer like that.
That's a classic show. I'm excited that it's out. Speaking of out, recently out is Joe Pera Talks With You, and Donovan and I are big fans of this show.
I feel that we've set ourselves a difficult task.
Tell me more.
Just to talk about this. Actually, I think it's at least for me on this show, the comedies are much harder to talk about than dramas.
They are.
And so I think we've set ourselves up for a tough task today, since both of the things we're really planning to talk about are comedies. But this one, it's just, you know, we could talk about it, but it's kind of like you either get the vibe of the show or you don't, because it's a little bit of like, you know, it's a mix of his stand-up comedy with somewhat nostalgic look at small-town life with mixed in with like the way the occasionally the episodes will turn into, you know, obviously be very inspired by like industrial videos or something, like little how-to videos or whatever. It's such a weird little, you're either on its wavelength or you're not.
That's true. The whole first episode of the second season is about finding a chair for retirement.
For Gene.
For Gene's retirement. His buddy Gene, older guy. And he's just looking for a chair, and Gene has been going to this same furniture store for, 9 weeks? 10 weeks? Something.
Something like months.
And he's gotten so familiar with the staff at the store, and that's it. You know, there's really no plot to some of these.
I love whenever they go, they just will start going into that almost like, those funny like training videos or something, where it's like they just start going over different types of chairs, and it's kind of fascinating, right? Like, it kind of, they make it sort of instead of dull, I know that sounds like the dullest thing in the world, but they make it sound, they make it fun, they make it funny.
They make it funny and warm. Joe Pair is a tone to all of these mundane situations, most of the mundane, is a gentle hand. And it really,
yes,
really makes me consider my own world in a much more positive way. Maybe a gentle,
kind of makes you want to be gentle, doesn't it?
It does. There's an example in episode 2 where his love interest burst in, and she thinks that she's a
like she's like a survivalist,
and she busts in, and she thinks, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe some bad stuff's about to go down, and they need to just go camp out until they figure out what's happening. And I thought of myself, if somebody I knew was like that and said, we got to leave right now, I would be so agitated and inconsolable. And instead, Joe Pera's actual line is, okay, it might be fun to go camping tonight. That's I think that's his line. And he just goes camping. And he goes, they go, and he builds a fire, and she catches fish. And they figure out that it was not quite the... There was no disaster on the horizon like they thought. And his reaction to so many of sometimes mundane, sometimes irritating life issues is really worth watching. It's kind of comedic at times.
I'd agree with that. I never thought about it like that, but it is so much of what his attitude, his affect, the way he exists in the world.
Another good example is in the first episode, out of nowhere, this sort of wild-haired guy pulls up, rolls down his window, and talks to Gene and Joe. And at one point, he says, can I borrow your phone? Anyone in the modern world would say, hell no, get a job, or just walk away. Instead, Joe just reaches in his pocket and hands the guy his phone, and the guy takes a selfie of himself and hands it back, and that's almost the end of the scene. That's it. Why put that in there? I don't know. It's kind of funny. It's quirky.
It's funny. It's quirky. It does kind of seem like part of what this show will do sometimes is it'll almost make it, it'll seem like things are right on the edge of going wrong, and they somehow never really do. So I don't know. Maybe it builds some of that tension.
It does build a little tension because I kept thinking the guy was going to drive off with his phone.
Same here. But then I guess, you know, the point of it may be like, say yes. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe something good will happen.
It does send that message. So Joe Pera talks with you. That's on Adult Swim. 4 episodes have aired, and they dropped 2 per airing. They're 15 minutes each. So
they go down easy.
Very easy. I highly recommend it. We've had one of our head writers, Corey Hensel, has written about the show on our site, and we've talked about the show before in its first season. So I highly recommend this show. Don't miss it.
And I think it's getting even, it's deepening, it's interested in characters. So Joe is obviously the core of it, but I think this season they're exploring character, even more exploring characters that aren't Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of deepening it.
And they did that a little in the second season too, you're right.
Yes, they did.
So go find it. Highly recommended from the staff here. That guy who comes up in the car and takes the selfie, that someone pointed out online, that was probably a Connor O'Malley addition to the script. And that makes sense. Okay, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk The Great, as well as some things coming up on the horizon. If you like what you hear, subscribe to us, rate us, review us, and share. TheAlabamaTake.com has plenty more on the site. This Song Sucks is still in production. You can find that podcast and subscribe to it in your podcast app, or you can listen to it directly from the website. If you have ideas for shows, discussions, let us know. Find us on social media. Find us on The Alabama Take on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Find us, say hello, message us, let us know what you're watching. Let's get back into today's episode. So Hulu aired its first season of The Great with Nicholas Hoult and one of the Fanning young ladies. What's which Fanning is it? Is it It's not Dakota.
It's L.
Oh, yeah, L. L. Fanning, not Dakota. I almost wanted to say Dakota, but it's L. Fanning, who does a masterful take on Catherine the Great over in Russia way back when. If you watch the first season, you know it's kind of goofy, odd, weird, but also entertaining, fun. There are some dramatic and intense things happening throughout. There is a through line through the episodes, the whole season. I got two guys here who have watched the first episode of the second season to kind of prep us on maybe what's to come. Has Hulu released all episodes? Did they dump them all, or are they doing release?
I believe that all 10 are currently out.
Gotcha. How much of the first season did you remember going in?
I remembered every time they said huzzah.
It took a bit of watching the first episode to, because I did no Wikipedia quick summation or anything from season one, which I'm we usually do. It's pretty quick, the pickup. Did you find that to be true? I mean, it kind of demands of you.
I did. Once you it really kind of picks up right where season one left off. There's not really, even though it's like supposedly 4 months have passed, but really there's a couple of the, if you can mostly remember what happened in the last episode, you'll be ready to roll for this one.
And what'd you make of the first episode of the second season? Is it worse, as good, or better?
Oh, I was going to say, it's definitely, this one is almost hard to, it's almost hard to measure, because it seems that the season is going to be, what does Catherine do now that she's gotten, now that she's won, right? Because the first season was her trying to overthrow Peter, and this episode kind of sets up her victory over Peter. So it is a little bit of that. It's a little bit of a bridge. It's a little bit of episode one, season 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Adam was going to say, I think I would agree with Adam and that it jumps right back in right where we left off.
Definitely with the humor.
Yeah.
It is moving just as fast and as crass as it was before. It's still very jarring for me to see young Tolkien just letting it fly.
Oh yeah.
Peter is unafraid of embracing all of life. just going for it. I was a little surprised. Well, I guess we'll get into light spoilers here. It's not really a show where that is determined by series of events, but you know, when you leave in the middle of a coup and you're unsure if it's been successful or not, and you have not figured out that Catherine the Great did indeed rule Russia, I suppose that parts of the episode could be spoiled for you.
Yeah.
But to what you said, Donovan, they did linger a bit more on the takeover than I expected. They're getting a little bit more out of that storyline. I finished episode one, it seems like that's not going to go away anytime soon. And they're having a lot of fun with that. And it's, to me, it's always, I was reminded of how it's a show that is doing a lot, but in a closed set. I think we talked about how it could almost be a play.
Yes.
You know, they really don't leave the palace that often. And it's an expansive cast, but it's also, there's only a handful of key players. And for something as wide-reaching as the takeover of a giant country, there's really not like a big armed conflict shown or anything like that. So it's all staying pretty small. And I guess that allows them to get more out of what's happening. You know, in addition to a lower budget, they can kind of drag out this part of the story. I mean, how long do you think that can go? We're setting ourselves up to be wrong here about a show that can be streamed in full right now, but I'm just interested from a narrative perspective, like what the pivot. Obviously, she's still pregnant; she's gonna have a kid, so that's got to be a plot point. In addition to, I mean, what's gonna happen to Peter,
who is more in love with her than ever at this point?
Yeah.
Which has been, I really thought Nicholas Holt did a fantastic job, same as last season, at playing Peter, because you really do kind of hate him, and you want to hate him, but he's so darn funny.
Mm-hmm.
And something, he has such a light touch with him, too. I think almost one of the best parts of the episode was Peter just kind of stumbling through. He never really has a plan because things just work out for him, and he acknowledges that.
Right.
I think his just kind of stumbling through the episode, you know, as opposed to, he's kind of a perfect foil for Catherine and her allies, who are the arch planners.
Right. Right.
And watching him just kind of, watching things just kind of work out or not for him was a real joy for the episode.
Oh, and
of the episode.
The one specific, I guess, spoiler-y thing, comic beat was the lookalikes. bit, which was one of their better recurring bits, I thought. When he was just shocked that they would shoot him when they were at that little house.
That could have been me.
Yeah, that was great. Very very funny and very very fitting for the displaying the stakes of the situation. That's a good bit about the show, is they never let you stray too far from these grave moments of life and death, yet it's all absurd.
That's kind of like I was thinking with Elle Fanning is doing such a good job of that too. Like they have her, the scene where she's literally eating dirt, because that's one of her pregnancy cravings, and it's like it works really well to, you know, there's a lot of drama, there's a lot of conflict going on, but it really deflates things because you know, She's able to, instead of it just highlights the absurdity of what's going on as she's in her tent eating dirt, trying to get her husband out so that she can kill him.
And there's moments where, you know, he says, "You think you can make things better, but what if things don't get better?" And then they all blame you.
I'm wondering if that's going to be sort of the thesis for the upcoming season.
Well, they're setting that up with, you know, everybody around her wants him dead, but she's trying to take the high road, and the burden of leadership when you're actually trying to rise to the occasion. Like, is the laissez-faire approach of Peter almost better for everyone than a super hands-on approach? Obviously, historically, we know where it goes, but it's an interesting question to ask at this point.
And you know, I think it's, you know, historically, Catherine really was an enlightened despot, too. You know, this is not like, she's not about to give power to the people. She's going to use her power. I don't know what's going to happen in the show, of course, but at least historically, enlightened despots are still despots.
And she's shown to deeply appreciate power already.
Yes.
She desires power. It's not, like you said, that she's falling forward into some position that her progressive nature has her make the best of. She orders death and destruction, for sure.
I think Elle Fanning is doing a fantastic job at... There's something about the way she plays Catherine where she's so composed that it almost seems like, you know, she often seems like she's one bit wrong move away from cracking up, but she never really does. She kind of manages to keep it together no matter what's going on around her. And it's been, I think she's doing a great job, kind of like what you said, with portraying someone who is now, instead of grasping for power, now more in power, and seeing the way that changes her.
Should be a good season.
Well, the history of Russia awaits.
Curious to, so I, watching this show, feel absolutely no impulse to look up what actually happened to compare it. Does anyone else feel the same way? Or?
No, totally.
There's more articles this go around about that than there were the first time. I feel like when this first came out last year, people didn't really know what to do with it. It's such an odd mix of, kind of like we've talked about, it is totally absurd, but it's also historical drama. And it's, you know, these famous actors involved in this streaming service show. It's just this weird collision of different things. And I think people are maybe taking it a bit more seriously this time because there are a few more let's connect the dots and try to predict what's going to happen. Kind of, I haven't read any of them. I was just doing a quick search on trying to remember who plays who outside of the main two characters, trying to kind of give a little jolt to my memory there. But I mean, it's maybe that's worth reading. I don't know. I feel like this is happening in such a bubble outside of true historical drama, historical yeah. fiction, that it does not feel necessary.
So coming on the horizon, we've got a full schedule next week. We got Hawkeye on Disney Plus that I bet a lot of us will watch. We've got The Beatles Get Back coming out on Disney Plus, and we got How To with John Wilson premiering, and that paired with Joe Pera might be sedated by this point next week with those shows. Anyway, that is it for this week. We appreciate you tuning in, and I guarantee you we're going to be talking about a lot of those things I just mentioned. Plenty to discuss in the coming weeks, and we'll do it all here. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you all soon.